everybody. Welcome back to Make Some Noise. We're now in seasons two. It's been a while since we've been on here with everything going on, but we're delighted to be back. And I've got Adam here beside me. Hi, Adam.
Hiya.
And I'm obviously Nick. And this series is going to be all about a big topic called change. So Adam's going to introduce it there.
Yeah, so change is obviously big topic, small word. And I suppose working in branding, we're working with people at the kind of cutting edge of change all the time. And I think we've been reflecting on that recently. And obviously with the year that went through there last year, it was a massive period of societal change, massive period of business and economic change. And not only do we want to just reflect on that, I think more pertinent for most people, we want to work out what does that mean for us all going forward. So as we work through each episode of this podcast, we're going to be looking at that. What does it mean from a societal point of view? What does it mean from an environmental point of view? What does it mean for culture? What does it mean for business?
Yeah, and I think just even the everyday thing, I think instead of sometimes it's very difficult, you know, in the current times that people kind of go, oh God, another week of this, that and the next, or, you know, Groundhog Day, I've heard a lot recently, but I think 11 months on, look at what we've all achieved. I think we all always have to take a positive stance, you know, from clients to consumers to agencies to organisations. We've all been able to really adapt rapidly to change. And I think it's because we've had to, we've no other option. So even from the work point of view, everything that was taking years before, like the working from home balance, e-conferencing, distributed teams has almost happened overnight. So I think we're much more nimble than we would, you know, allow ourselves to think, or we're much more nimble than, you know, than we thought we were.
I think everyone being forced to do this, all of us all together, is a one-off. Well, hopefully.
Would you think that's easier? Like, I was listening to a podcast there the other day, and it was about a trainer who she helps, you know, high achievers train. And there was a study, and, you know, two different colleges, and it was just a study of students going through exams. And one student who was all on his own was really stressed, but the group that were doing an exam all together, their stress levels weren't as high as the guy on his own, just purely because it was a community thing. They were all in the same boat together.
Yeah, very much. I mean, we're a herd animal. So, you know, we always thrive better when we feel like we're doing it as part of a group, which is ironic with this whole pandemic. We're all being forced to separate, but new technologies meant us, we're all more connected. So, yeah, when you look throughout human history, human beings are able to withstand an enormous amount of, you know, pressure and unpleasantness if they can feel like they're all in it together. And obviously, there's no fear of missing out right now. There is no FOMO right now, because absolutely everyone's missing out. I think it's one of the things of the plagues of social media was that all of us felt that we were missing out on some good time somebody else is having, or until you observe the good time. You know, anytime you see any social media people in the flesh, they don't look like they're having a good time themselves. So right now, we're all going through this kind of huge social experiment, I suppose.
And it's funny, like the words that I'm hearing a lot more now are the likes of interconnectivity, ecosystem, my choices affect your choice. You know, it's all this kind of, just saying, we're all this kind of, we're on an even keel now. But at the same time, it's a collective
thing. I think it is. It's very much a collective thing, which, look, there's good and bad with that. You know, you've heard of mob mentality, whereby, you know, people can all gather around the wrong cause. And certainly we've seen that in America recently, where people can be galvanized behind the wrong thing until they realize. So that's the downside, I suppose, to being a herd animal, is that sometimes we're easily led off a cliff. However, I think, you know, we are changing as a society. We are changing.
Definitely.
Going through this period.
Yeah.
It's not something people like. You know, we know change is very good for us. We know change is good for us on a human level, on an individual level. All of us, you know, have to change all the time, or else life becomes boring.
Yeah, and I think that whole idea of, oh, when everything gets back to normal, that's just not going to happen. Everyone's waking up to that. But I heard the other day it's going to be a new different, which I quite like that saying. Like, we all know it's never going to be the same now, is it?
I'm not sure that we all know.
The new different.
Yeah, I think you raised this point to me the other day that, you know, the idea that, you know, we all get the vaccine and everything goes back to normal, and you were sort of saying, well, that's not how it will happen. And I kind of went, oh, yeah. So I think in a way people kind of go, oh, yeah, but they've not actually worked out what that means. Mm. I think some people are starting to work that out.
Mm.
But I think you're absolutely right. This is like a seesaw. We've gone up and then we're going to come down. But the ground we come back down onto is going to be very different, you know?
I think as well people are, the whole pandemic has made people more mindful of everything they're doing. So I think we're being more deliberate or mindful of choosing what matters to us, like as we're saying there about sustainability, the environment, social change, all of those kind of things, but also what to invite into our lives going forward.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I mean, just as a small aside, I saw a wonderful interview with Bill Murray. I don't think there's a bad interview with Bill Murray, but at the end of the interviewer asked him, you've done so much in life. You've achieved so much. Is there anything that you would actually like going forward? And Bill Murray just went, I'd like to be more present.
Mm.
And I just thought it was he said, I'd just like to be more in the moment and to remind myself to be more in the moment. And I think that that really resonated with me because, you know, and I think, again, you said this the other day, that pessimists are people that look in the past, or live in the past, rather, and optimists are people that live in the future. And I think, you know, look, all of us can live a little bit in the past at times and a little bit in the future, but that idea that we should just pause and just be here now, I think is what this pandemic is. We've all slowed down a lot more.
Yeah,
I think this is really challenging us to look at our lives, look at how we're conducting ourselves. As you said, making better choices as well.
Definitely. And I think that even, you know, the whole shop local and, you know, at Christmas there was a couple of, I think there was a list created of support these 100 local Irish craft businesses or food businesses. And that list soon became, I think Conor Pope, you know, started it. That list soon became 200.
Yeah.
But even I think that whole shop local, they support your local economy, that's always been ingrained in you, I think, certainly with me growing up. But I think that's way more prevalent now because you're not allowed to go beyond your 5K anyway. But that kind of thing. But also, you know, even I know the climate change, and I know I'll probably harp on about that a lot, but because I'm really passionate about that, but I know that's a big, wider, open subject, but there's everyday small changes people can be doing, you know, that whole interconnectivity, this collective change. If you do one little thing and the next person does another, you know, it's all combined.
I would absolutely agree. I think the thing that, I think there's a strange thing about change, that people think change is like one massive thing, like it's one massive kind of like, oh, I'm going to do this, and it's a bit like that New Year's resolution, I'm going to do this, and at the end of the year I'll have a six pack, you know. But I think you're absolutely right. Change in its truest self is, I think, a series of small decisions that make a huge impact. And they can be uncelebrated, but I think that is what growth really is. I think you're right. I mean, as you said before, people do want to shop local and all that kind of thing. But what was interesting about that, well, from my perspective, is how hard it was to do. When you started to kind of go, right, I'm not shopping on Amazon anymore, I'm going to shop on X, and say you picked out a book or something like that, you realise Amazon weren't charging me anything for the shipping, whereas this local supplier, who's just down the road, was charging me like €15, and so those decisions.
Yeah, well, that's it.
You have to follow through.
Money, doesn't it?
Yeah, you have to follow through.
Yeah, but speaking of money, I think I'm quite fond of Mary Porter and what she has to say about, you know, the retail landscape.
Yes.
And her big kind of saying is, You know, it can't be about financial progress anymore. It has to be about social progress too. So, you know, business can no longer be about growth or money at any cost. So she calls them the fat cats. It was all about profit and growth and this, that and the next. But now, obviously, that whole social progress and that the mark on the landscape, your footprint, your carbon footprint, all of those things. So think about if you're ordering something on Amazon, all the logistics and, you know, the transport and how that is even affecting the environment just by buying something on Amazon. You know?
I think that's an interesting point. And you know, look, I know you're big into Mary and her message. I mean, I think cynics would go, well, she's made her money now. She can afford to be.
Yeah, it's funny, she actually, you'd swear she was a friend of mine, but I listened to her podcast, but she actually even cites that she's come way late. She's in her 60s, like, she's come way late to the party, and she's interviewing a lot of people, and she's called it the kindness economy.
Yeah.
And it's all about how they're doing good and the changes they're making, for, you know, socially and environmentally and all of those good things. And one of the guys she actually had on there the other day was the CEO of Triodos Bank, which is...
I've never heard of it.
No, neither did I. And I'm almost annoyed with myself for not knowing. They've been going since 1980.
Right, where are they from?
They're in the UK and they're a sustainable bank.
Okay, so explain, what is it? Is it they're running hemp oil or something
well,
like
no,
that?
Well, no, it's funny, like, so you kind of go, okay, banks were set up years ago, obviously, to mind your money for you.
Yeah.
But also, the whole idea was, like, so, okay, you didn't want it stuffed under your mattress that might be stolen or might go up in a fire. So,
yeah.
But also, the banks were meant to actually put your money into your local community and environment and help you, basically.
Okay.
But that's not the way, it's because of deregulation.
A bit like A Wonderful Life in that sense. Yeah,
exactly, yeah. So sustainable banking is determining basic human needs and meeting those. So for example, you know, if there was a load of cash down in Bank of Ireland, they might help put some of that towards the local library or that kind of thing.
Okay.
But it's, you know, apparently a lot of the big banks have money in fossil fuels and oil and all that kind of thing, whereas Triodos Bank is all about making money work for positive social environmental change. So it's cultural, their money might go into cultural events or social housing or
right.
So you're basically, and they're one of the big things about them is that they're fully transparent and they publish their annual reports in a very transparent manner so everybody can see.
So
all that.
Does that cost you anything? If you, I mean, I'm looking as not a sales pitch for them, but like,
sure,
you know,
yeah, I actually don't know any other interest rates, and I think that's what one of the points is. Everybody, you know, when it's set up a bank account, you kind of generally know the interest rates, or you know, you're getting a new mortgage. But what another interesting point as we're talking about change is, to change your, you know, what was it? People are more likely to get a divorce than change their bank. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Because everyone knows how such an arduous, horrible
process. Whereas getting
a
divorce is so easy, right?
Yeah, but everyone knows, you know, changing a bank and dealing with banks is generally so arduous, isn't
yeah.
it? And, you know, everything's a pain. It's 10-page application.
It never makes sense.
Yeah. But I thought it was a really interesting story. And I think the reason we're only hearing about these things now is because, going back to that point, we're all much more mindful about our choices and people are consciously making choices. And the fact we're now hearing about, oh God, Jesus, there's a sustainable bank, doing good,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's in our awareness now, and you're hearing these stories, and you're kind of more acceptable and more open to them, as opposed to, oh, it's just, okay, there's Bank of Ireland or AIB, and then we hear today Ulster Bank is exiting the Irish market as well. So
yes, Well, I mean, yeah, I suppose it's a huge topic in its own right, isn't it? How does finance, I mean, obviously we work in this space a bit, how does the financial institutions, because they're going to go through a huge period of change, how does that whole period, we might actually get into that more.
Yeah,
in
I think that'd be another,
right?
Yeah, because we're working with a lot of fintechs at the minute, and even that the whole advent of Revolut, and I think 50% of the Irish nation now have Revolut
yeah.
in the last 12 months because of COVID.
Literally a revolution.
So you're kind of considered old hat if you don't have a Revolut.
So, I mean, you know, taking something like, what they call Triodos, sorry? Right, yeah, I'm just not familiar with the name. Okay, so that what we're seeing there is it's obviously financial, but it's also how, you know, consumers work and how that impacts the high street, the sustainability. I mean, right now, the high street's closed. And I suppose, even pre-pandemic, it's fair to say the high street wasn't in great shape.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, definitely.
You know, we kind of every month or so seem to hear of another big chain, you know, like your Debenhams or, you know.
Well, that's it. You hear all these stories and a lot of the, like, you know, it's what works in one kind of country isn't necessarily going to work in another. So you can see Topshop, Warehouse, what other, Debenhams, all the UK retailers are pretty much gone out of the Irish market, you know?
Yeah.
But it's also, you know, I think we go into some of those stores here in Ireland and they were just Deadsville. They weren't trying anything. They were dull as hell and they were, you know, the likes of Debenhams was just so old.
Yeah,
you know, didn't move with the times.
I kind of, when you were chatting to me about, you know, the high street again, I think it was a Mary Porter's one that inspired this conversation, you know, it made me reflect, like, some of these chains that seem to take over the UK, you know, before Ireland, they seem to take over the UK. And so when you went from one UK town to another, there was nothing different. You know, okay, the geography changed, but like you, the same stores, and you had nothing there that was unique. So there was nothing there to cry about too much. And the stores that I kind of, you know, I suppose regret kind of going were ones that seemed to be doing well, but were attached to these big chains and seemed to kind of go down with them, you know. So I think, you know, the point is like, we're not mourning them because they weren't very enjoyable experiences, were they?
Yeah, I remember years and years ago when BHS came to town and Mum used to bring us in and it was a big treat. We'd have, there was a cafe upstairs.
Yeah, yeah.
And you'd have your cream bun or whatever. But it was a real, the fact I really remember it almost emotionally. But the fact that BHS was different at the time. You know, it was bringing something different. And it was that novelty of, oh, we're going to get a new dress in here that nobody else has.
Yeah.
Or it was that they had bringing something different to the market.
But it's exciting.
Yeah. But it's that, it brings us back to what we would say branding is all about. It's that experience.
Yeah.
You know, create a great experience and you've won the battle.
I know. People would seek it out, wouldn't they?
If that experience becomes dull, boring, the same as we're saying, if you're saying same experience in every town, it's kind of lost its way.
Yeah.
And I think even now, you know, we're in a long lockdown here. So when we come out of that, when the shop's finally open again, I don't think it's enough. Like, I went into Penny's there a few months ago. And obviously nobody was manufacturing. And you go into the shop and the same old crap was on the for sale. That, oh, that, there's the bikini I bought 3 months ago or whatever. It's still on the racks. But I don't think that's good enough. And I think people are going to expect a bit more of a wow factor when they go back into the shops.
Yeah,
it has to be a bit more of fanfare, a bit more pizzazz. I think retailers have to try harder.
Yes.
And, you know, to be empathetic about it. Everybody's been stuck at home. It's, I think the power is in the consumer's hands as well. Like, they need us as much as we need them to.
Yeah.
You know, so they'll need a bit of loyalty. Like, right now, you're kind of going, who, what retailers are you going to be loyal to?
Yeah, what I mean, I think that, you know, pre-pandemic, there was this kind of the internet versus the high street kind of argument, debate.
Yeah, yeah.
And the internet seemed to be winning. Now, by virtue of a pandemic, the internet is clearly, it's won, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's not a case of one versus the other. I think it's a case of they're very different.
Yeah.
And it's about not so much even coexisting as what will you seek out in future?
Yeah.
You know? And we're all, I mean, look, we all seek out experiences. None of us want to be, one thing, it's all very out shopping on the internet, but none of us want to be stuck in our houses all the time.
No.
And going out to the shops is a great experience.
So much paint walls and DIY.
Well, exactly. But we do want experiences. We do want our life to be richer.
Mm.
So the things that are dying in the high street were meant to die. Yeah. They've just died a lot quicker.
Yeah.
What will come next, I think, is something that is got to be a richer experience. It's got to be something that we are invested in.
Yeah. Well, I think it might go back to even the local shops. It might come back to that whole collective ecosystem-y thing and then coming together. And like, you don't want to go down the street and half the shops are shut.
No.
It has to be this whole experience, as opposed to just one shop doing really great. And you know, that coming together.
I think your point there about local shops is well made, because I think what you see is like the likes of butchers. If it's a good butcher, people travel for miles to see it and whatever. Not to see it, but obviously shop there, not just looking at it. But I think that idea that you don't need to make a chain to make something great on the high street. It doesn't need to be one of a thousand, you know?
It just needs to be doing something really well, or, you know, having the most tastiest buns, or the best vegan produce or whatever. It just needs to be doing it really well. I think, as you know, from shopping online, you want stuff delivered on, you know, not 5 weeks later because of Brexit or whatever. But, people want things now.
Yeah.
So that speed.
And I mean, I think the whole thing about shopping local is you feel like your choices are making a difference.
Yeah,
you're keeping the money in your community.
Absolutely.
And what have you. So I think that idea that your choices make a difference
is
quite key here. Yeah. And that's about change.
Totally.
That's about individual change that a person can make. Your individual choices every single day will add up the whole heap, because you'll keep your local community alive, you'll be supporting like good quality produce, etc., etc. So when we were talking about this, I was kind of thinking about this idea that, and again, I think it's one for a bigger topic, you know, people are afraid of change, or they think that change is for other people, you know, that you have to be Nelson Mandela to make change, you know, you have to be this big person. And what we've been discussing there is that change is in all of us. It's something that, although we might all innately fear, it's something we all innately need.
Yeah.
And I think the as we're saying, the choices you make can make a huge difference. So I was kind of grasping around for, you know, my usual historical topic here. I was thinking about the London Underground map. And, you know, we're so familiar with that map that every network, and rail network, transport network in the world uses a version of that map.
Sure.
But most of us aren't aware that before that map came along, the complexity of you know, transport maps before that, you know, so that if you ever go online, have a look at a London Underground map before that map turned up in 1932. And they are incredibly complex. They're maps as we would expect them to be. They have the roads, they have the exact geography, they're all windy and twisty and really complicated. It's actually really hard to work out where you're going in London Underground if you use a traditional map method. And it was created by a London Underground employee named Harry Beck, who wasn't a map maker. It's basically a circuit diagram, because what Harry realised, and what those in the power that be and map makers hadn't realised, those with the traditional mindset and traditional tools, is that we were solving the wrong problem. We were putting all of this data and info into a map that people didn't need. So we were telling them, where's the river? You don't need to know where the river is if you can't see it. Don't need to know where the church is. But what you did need to know was where you were now and where you wanted to go next.
Yeah.
And I think that analysis of looking at the problem we have now, really working it out, not using the tools of yesterday, and where do you want to go next, I think is really key. And right now in this internet age, we're drowning in data and info, far too much info. Like, we don't need to know what's happening in sub-Saharan Africa all the time. We don't need to know what's happening in New Zealand. We didn't really need to know about Trump's America that much, right? Every day, all of us being brought down by that.
It's just all this negativity as well, isn't it? Negative press that drowns you and kind of brings you down.
And so you're affected by info that you have no control over.
Yeah.
That you can't change the direction of, that you feel powerless in the face of, and distract you from your real challenge. And I think that's what Harry Beck's map shows us, is that those maps before him were showing us where the river was and were showing us how to get to this cathedral or that church, but you weren't driving that train. So you had no control over that info. You were just being shared it. What you did have control of is where you started and where you ended. And I think we need to use that philosophy in our life, in our business. Pay attention to what you control.
Yeah.
Where are you now?
Yeah.
Where do you want to go next? And leave aside the stuff that we don't control.
And keep doing, you know, that incremental change, isn't it?
Yes.
As we always say with brands, if you stand still, you're not going places at
absolutely.
All, literally.
You're going backwards. Yeah. Like
you can't stand still.
No, you can't stand still. So procrastination is never your friend.
Yeah.
Change doesn't have to be big or exciting or flashy. It doesn't have to be heralded, but it's something where you go, right, what's the most important thing I could do today?
Yeah.
And sometimes change can be not changing. As we were saying, we were looking at, on behalf of a client, we were looking at Amelia Earhart, the famous female aviator, the other day. And one thing that struck me was the letter she wrote to her future husband. And the letter made quite clear that she wasn't going to change her flying.
Mm.
She wasn't going to change that because she was getting married. She made it quite clear to him that was a condition of getting married. And in that instance, her change to the world was not to change. Like every other woman at that time when they got married, well, settle down, you have kids. And she was making it quite clear she wasn't going to settle down. She wasn't going to change. She was being true to herself.
Sure.
And I think that...
this is a brave thing to do.
It is. Yeah. So change isn't actually... sometimes it's just being the truest version of yourself and not doing what everyone else expects us to do, or not doing what was done before, as Harry Beck's map shows us again.
Mm.
You don't use the tools of yesterday to solve the problems of tomorrow. But how you solve things, how you move forward, is analyse what is the real problem. Do I have more info than I need to solve that problem?
Yeah.
And how do I keep moving forward?
Yeah.
So that was my historical analogy. I know I always bore Evan to death with those. But I also think that example from Amelia, that sometimes the best thing we can be is the truest version of our own selves.
Sure.
And let the world know that we're doing it. Be honest with the world.
Yeah.
She was honest with her future husband. The fact that she disappeared over the ocean just proved that she stayed true to herself right to the end.
Mm.
You know? So
and then, businesses and brands, like we're helping the last 12 months or so, I think some of them were just kind of a bit numb of what to do next.
Correct.
Or how do they kind of think outside the box a bit, like you couldn't overtly advertise at one point, but now it's about thriving and surviving and knowing your audience and everybody, as we're talking all about, you know, consumers and how their behaviours are changing. But to be a bit more, I suppose, mindful of that, and at the end of the day, you know what your customer wants and give it to them. But that's where a lot of brands don't get it right.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think as we go through this series two of the podcast, as you said there, I think it's going to be really good to dig into some of these areas in a lot more detail.
Yeah.
Because change scares the bejesus out of everybody, but it shouldn't do. I think it's one of the most exciting things possible.
And I think some of us are, you know, more naturally risk takers than others. That's just the way it is. So.
Yeah, but like, you know,
it
can be... as we've discussed there, it can be small or it can be big.
Yeah.
Change can be not doing anything at all. It can be not changing, being the truest version of yourself. Change is, I think, intrinsically about being honest, though. What is going on right now? Tell yourself the truth. Have ambition that you don't have to be this massive figurehead or spend 20 years in prison to make a change. It can be a small thing. It can be like, right, I'm actually going to switch my bank.
To a sustainable bank. Like, there you go. There's one kind of... you go, God, I never even knew they existed. You know?
I'm going to give my custom to my local butcher right now, ran the big multinational chain.
Yeah.
I'm going to... okay. So buying the book off the local bookshop might cost me a couple of euro more.
Mm.
But is it better to have that bookshop in my high street?
It's the conscious choice, isn't it, on an individual level and on a business or brand level. It's knowing what your consumers want, or how has their behaviour shifted in the last 12 months. It's been very different. So it's keeping an eye on the prize that way.
And even just that idea that, you know, we don't need as much stuff as we thought we needed.
No.
So
less is more.
Less is more. Like, so when we're making those choices, what we're consuming, like, isn't it better to invest in something than just to kind of consume something?
Yeah, I think even just to be a bit more enterprising versus, you know, make do and mend.
Yeah.
But also I think a lot of us have gone back to baking and cooking and, go, you know, even, you know, 10-year-old Jamie there is basically, I gave him just shop-bought noodles last night for the first time in I don't know how long, and he didn't really like his dinner. He's like, no, Mummy, shop food isn't as nice as your food.
There you go.
He's used to home cooking now again, you know.
There you go. So as we go through this series, I'm quite excited to kind of dig into this. Going to look at the areas of social change, environmental change.
Yes.
Cultural change.
Yeah.
I suppose, being us, we can only every once in a while we'll mention brands or stuff that we've found.
Yeah, that's our world, isn't it?
Or the likes of what Mary Portas or other people kind of bring to the table.
Yeah.
But I think those points there that you're making there, just, you know, that we can make a change just, I think you actually came up with, said this quote earlier, that sometimes our choice of where we shop from is more important than who we vote for.
Yeah.
I think you actually made that point quite clear.
Yeah.
And I think you're right, because that's a daily choice rather than one that happens every 3 or 4 years and one that with limited effect. Whereas, like, where you shop from is a daily impact. So I think that was a really good observation. So, you know, even where we bank from, and we can absolutely support a high street, but the high street in turn has to create experiences that people want.
Yeah.
They have to bring,
I think there's a stat out there, 3/4 of people value decency in business as much as price and convenience.
Okay, that's so great.
That's quite like that.
Yeah, that's a great quote. And then I think my small historical point is about, we're drowning in data at the moment. And I think it's a case of knowing what you need to know. Put the other stuff aside.
Mm.
That there are things you control and things you don't control. But what you do control is trying to work out where you are now and work out where you want to go next.
Yeah.
So I think that's a suitable recap. And I think that's a suitable entry to season 2. As I say, I'm looking forward to getting tucked into some of these subjects. And I think what we'll do is unpack each one in more detail.
Yeah, today was kind of a hello and a nice overview.
So that's goodbye from me, Adam, and...
And it's goodbye for me. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and have a look us up on Instagram and LinkedIn. And thanks again for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you.